The Philippine Health Department backs government's move to downgrade the lockdown in the NCR Plus bubble and surrounding provinces. We'll discuss this with health reform advocate Dr. Tony Liachon. Raw data from the health department shows some of the recent COVID-19 deaths were mild or asymptomatic cases. ABS-CBN's data analytics team chief Edson Guido will help us dissect the latest numbers. And another curfew violator dies, allegedly at the hands of local authorities in Laguna. The top Chinese health official admits China-made vaccines may not be as effective against COVID-19 as advertised. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. The health department defending government's move to downgrade the NCR Plus bubble back to the second strictest lockdown level. From April 12 to 30, the National Capital Region, Bulacan, Cavite, Laguna, and Rizal, they'll all be placed under a modified enhanced community quarantine or MECQ. It will also be in place over the provinces of Quirino and Abra, as well as the city of Santiago in Isabela. The DOH says this decision was based on a cost-benefit analysis. It also considered the lockdown's impact on the economy.
We cannot still see the effect of the ECQ that we have done. But if we look at the numbers right now, it is still increasing. But hopefully, the hope would be because of all of these measures that we are doing, in about 2 weeks' time, we will see the decline in the number of cases. What would be most important right now to consider would be the healthcare utilization. These are the hospital network, the TPMFs, and the care for our patients.
This comes as the Philippines recorded 11,681 new COVID-19 cases on Sunday, pushing the country's total to nearly 865,000. The latest data from the health department show over 146,500 cases remain active. The country also confirmed more than 55,200 new recoveries, the highest so far in a single day. The death toll, meanwhile, rose to 14,945 after 201 more people succumbed to the disease. A disturbing development in the local fight against COVID-19. Some of the most recent coronavirus deaths in the Philippines are apparently mild and even asymptomatic patients. But the health department says the patients may have died from other causes. The health agency adds it's possible the mild or asymptomatic cases turned critical or severe. It's just that their raw data didn't reflect it. Well, let's dig deeper into the latest COVID-19 figures in the Philippines. Now joining us, the head of ABS-CBN's data analytics team, Edson Guido. Edson, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Ms. Carmina. Thanks for having me.
All right. It's been, I think, over a year since we last talked. I must say I do miss our chit-chats in the newsroom, but one day soon we'll all be together again.
Likewise.
All right. So let's get down to business. I want to talk about the recent numbers. We've seen the numbers go up and down in recent days. How many cases are there on the average per day? I understand that you prepared a chart for us. Let's go to that chart now. Go ahead, Edson.
So in terms of cases, the Philippines is now averaging around 10,000 cases daily in the past 7 days. Actually, we saw a relatively lower number of cases around this time last week due to the low number of tests conducted during Whole Week. So in a way, that was really an artificial decline, Ms. Carmina. But in the past 3 days, we're back to over 10,000 cases again as testing started to normalize. So now we're seeing that cases are actually plateauing at around 10,000. But in terms of deaths, the 201 deaths reported by DOH yesterday was the fifth time in the last 6 days of more than 200 deaths. And unfortunately, we're really seeing a steep increase in fatalities now. And then in terms of active cases, DOH yesterday reported a record of more than 55,000 recoveries. However, if you look at the active cases, we still have nearly 150,000 active cases in the Philippines. And that's the highest in Southeast Asia. Actually, the 190,000 active cases recorded the day before was the highest for any country in Southeast Asia since the start of the pandemic. So as we speak, Ms. Carmina, our numbers are still not looking good.
Yeah, we're going to go into that later on, one by one, as we go through your charts. But first, let's look at the confirmed COVID-19 cases in the Philippines. That chart showing us, as you just said, an average of 10,000 cases per day. But Edson, if you compare the numbers, these numbers that we have right now to the same period last year, what's the comparison there?
Compared to the same period last year, this is definitely the newest peak, no? We're seeing more than 10,000 cases. In last year, when we reached the peak in August, we were just reporting at the highest, it's at 6,900. But for the average, we were just averaging around more than 4,000 cases a day in August last year. Now we're consistently breaching the 10,000 mark, no? Mm-hmm. So it's actually more than two times. And at the same time, an important difference between the cases last year and this year is that when we see the number of reported cases by DOH this year, these are really fresh cases. If you remember, Ms. Carmina, last year we still had fresh and late cases. So
correct.
The numbers last year also included the backlogs from previous months. Right now, we're no longer seeing those numbers. These are relatively new ones. So in terms of cases, this is really worse, no, what we're seeing now compared to last year.
Okay, but Edson, the numbers may be grave, the numbers may be high, but I'm going to have to ask you this. Are the numbers really reflective of what's happening on the ground? Because the numbers that you have, the data that you have, are only coming from the testing results,
yes,
right? We do know the situation about mass testing, but that's not happening. So the question is, as grave as the numbers may seem, are these reflective of what's happening on the ground, Edson?
Yes, definitely. The numbers are worse on the ground, no, Ms. Carmina? For one, you're right that we're only talking about the number of positive tests. And secondly, in terms of the totals of DOH, they are only considering RT-PCR tests. We're not even talking about the antigen tests yet in these numbers. So definitely, the numbers are definitely higher. Even in terms of deaths, because DOH is only considering the number of fatalities based on those who are positive from RT-PCR tests. So we're not yet talking about the deaths that happened from, say, the probable or suspect cases of COVID-19. So these are all numbers that are definitely underreported.
I want to go to the chart that you prepared for us that shows the number of tests that are conducted daily. Where are we at this point? How many tests are we seeing daily, Edson?
As you can see from the chart that on testing, there was a dip before that during the Holy Week, but 63,839 tests were actually conducted on April 8th. That's the highest in a single day, no? Hmm. And as for the seven-day average, we're currently at 51,000. So again, that we saw a dip during the Holy Week before that that surge the past few days that we're seeing in testing. So now we're seeing tests that are above 60,000, but if we look at the average for the past 7 days, we're still around the 50,000 range. And analysts and experts have been saying that we need to test more, especially
right.
In areas where the positivity rates are very high, because right now at the national level, we're at 20% positivity rate. So that means that one person is testing positive out of five people tested. So that's very high. And that's the national level. When we dig deeper into certain regions like Metro Manila, like Calabar Zone, Central Luzon, the positivity rates are even higher. So these are the areas that we need to test even more.
Mm-hmm. And right now you said we're averaging at about 51,000, not average, but that's the figure that we have, around yeah. 51,000 tests. But what is that magic number for us to really present the clear, absolute, realistic picture of the COVID situation here in the Philippines? Where should that number be in terms of testing?
Well, Ms. Carmina, the World Health Organization benchmark is a positivity rate of 5% or lower. We're currently at 20%. So right now, if we're averaging 10,000 cases daily, for us to reach that 5% positivity rate, we need to test 20 times more than the 10,000. So on average, that's around more than 100,000, nearly 200,000 tests per day, just to reach the positivity rate of 5%. So we're clearly far away from that ideal target right now, even if we're testing more at 60,000.
Now, if we follow the same trend, where will we be by the end of the month? What's your projection?
Actually, for now, the numbers that we'll see in the coming days, Ms. Carmina, will be the effect of the ECQ, because usually when an intervention is introduced, the impact will be felt at least 2 to 3 weeks after. Like, for instance, when MECQ was imposed in August last year, reported cases were still increasing days after. We only started to see the decline 2 to 3 weeks after. And it's the same trend with ECQ now, where we haven't really seen a sustained decrease. Actually, right now, we're plateauing, both in terms of cases and positivity rate. So for my projection for the rest of the month, now that we're under MECQ, today, I think we'll probably report 11,000 to 12,000 cases today.
By end of day?
Yes, for today. And then probably around 200 deaths too. And then reported cases will decline on Tuesday and Wednesday, because these numbers, Ms. Carmina, will reflect the lower number of tests that were conducted during the weekend. So on weekends, some labs are not operating. So if you notice the trend, usually numbers are lower every Tuesday and Wednesday. And then we'll breach 900,000 total cases by Thursday, and then hit 1 million cases before the end of the month. So that's my forecast for the rest of April while NCR Plus is under MECQ.
So do you think, though, that that's going to be even more, because this projection was taken into account the ECQ that was existing at that time? We do know that those restrictions have been lifted. When I was going through your charts, the projection initially was 900,000 by the end of the month. So you're now bumping that up. You're now saying it's 1 million. Is that already factoring in the easing of restrictions, Edson?
Yes, that's right. That's correct, Ms. Carmina. So I'm now seeing 900,000 by Thursday, and then 1 million before the end of the month. So hopefully we see an increase, a decrease in numbers in the coming days if we take into account the timing of the ECQ. Actually, Ms. Carmina, when cases peak in 2020, the government actually imposed a 2-week MECQ, and then that's it. Now we had the 1-week bubble, 2 weeks of ECQ, and then nearly 3 weeks of MECQ. So in a way, the government also acknowledges the gravity of the situation. It's just that personally, in my opinion, is the ECQ and MECQ this year the same as last year's? Right. Especially after for ECQ, when we saw a total lockdown last year, we didn't see the same total lockdown actually this year. No. So for me, at the end of the day, I think it all boils down to the actual implementation on the ground. And of course, for us to maximize these mobility restrictions, we need to see improvements in testing, tracing, and isolation as well. The other aspects of our pandemic response definitely needs to scale up for us to maximize the impact of this ECQ or MECQ.
I want to go back to the active cases and the numbers that you have on the recovering and the active cases, because the way I see it, Edson, the story lies there. Between the number of active cases and the number of recovering cases is the healthcare system and the need for isolation facilities. It's getting pretty worse for doctors and nurses and our frontliners there. So let's talk about the chart. The chart of active cases now. The result of that is when you go to the next chart, and that's the total number of deaths.
Yes.
So, and when you look at one statistic or one point there, one digit there, that's not a number, Edson. That's an actual person. And that's pretty sobering when you think about it. So going back, between the recovering and the active cases, I said there's the healthcare system right there and the isolation facilities. You were mentioning about ramping up government's COVID response. Based on the data that you have, based on the numbers that you have, for us to take away the burden from the healthcare system, which is resulting really in the increasing number of deaths, how might it look like in terms of numbers? How many isolation facilities? We already talked about the number of testing. It has to be 10 times more. So what can you say about that, Edson? What's your reading on that?
Actually, our active cases are really daily. Whenever we reach a new record high, it just continues to go up every day, because with the way DOH reports their recoveries, they're just basically reporting hundreds of recoveries daily. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly every Sunday they report, like yesterday, 55,000 new recoveries. So if you look at the chart of active cases, it just continues to go up every day with a decline every Sunday. So it's not really the trend that we're accustomed to globally when we see an increase or a decrease in active cases daily, depending on the situation. In the Philippines, it's different. Active cases continue to go up daily, and I'm not sure whether that's really reflective of what's happening on the ground, because for sure, it's not just, say, right now, it's at 150,000 active cases, because we saw 55,000 recoveries yesterday in just one day. So we're not really sure if that's the actual number on the ground. And you're right, Ms. Casey, we have to contain the spread of the virus soon, because a proportion, unfortunately, of the active cases will eventually turn into deaths if this continue. And our hospitals are reporting full capacity right now, even the isolation facilities. So I think we also have to ramp up our infrastructure when it comes to those in terms of additional beds, additional isolation facilities, just to cope up with the rising surge in the number of cases that we're seeing now.
Mm. Okay, just a final question. For sure, and you've heard about this, for sure the situation that we have here in the Philippines is not exclusive to us. We do know that that's happening also in other countries. But in terms of numbers, Edson, how are the numbers doing, if you have been able to compare, and how have they been reacting to the data in their respective countries, only if you're able to, you know, do some cross comparison between your numbers and your studies and theirs, Edson?
Actually, we just have to look at the Southeast Asian region, no, Ms. Carmina. Right now, it's only in the Philippines where we're seeing this steep increase in terms of the number of cases. Like yesterday, in terms of new cases, the Philippines reported 11,681 cases, followed by Indonesia at 4,000 cases. So, and then Malaysia at 1,739. And then the rest of the other countries in the region are reporting less than 1,000 cases in a day. And as for active cases, it's really the Philippines at number one, followed by Indonesia with 110,000. And then the other Southeast Asian countries have less than 16,000 active cases. So imagine their active cases, the other countries in Southeast Asia in terms of their active cases, it's still lower compared to our new cases per day. And in terms of the trend, it's really in the, we're only seeing that increase in terms of 10,000 new cases per day in the Philippines. So it's not happening in other countries. So it's really in terms of new cases and then active cases in the Philippines, I can say that we're really an outlier in Southeast Asia.
All right. And we do hope that the numbers change and we will no longer be the outlier in the coming months. But until then, you know, we're just going to have to keep on keeping at it and make sure that those numbers continue to, or at least begin to go down. In the meantime, we'd like to thank you, Edson Guido, chief of the ABS-CBN's data analytics team. Edson, I want to see you again in the newsroom. I miss having those chit-chats with you. You take care.
Same here. Thanks for having me, Ms. Casey. Take care. And please stay safe.
You too. Keep safe. Right, from there, former health chief Esperanza Cabral once again criticizing the Duterte administration for its COVID-19 response. This is what she's saying. She says government has not done anything significant during the 2 weeks of hard lockdown in the NCR Plus bubble.
What we've done is gone through enhanced lockdowns 3 times already. And each time we said it is to make sure that the health capacity is improved so that the next time around, we will be able to deal with it better, but we haven't really done that. We have, for example, the one hospital command center adding more people to man telephone lines. We have PGH getting their Bayanihan Muna Operation Center going on. We have about 127 healthcare workers from Region 7 coming in to augment the hospitals. So these are positive things, but they are little things.
The Financial Executives Institute of the Philippines are welcoming government's decision to downgrade lockdown measures in the National Capital Region and nearby provinces. Phoenix President Attorney Francis Lim says this will allow more industries to reopen and more employees can go back to work. But the group reiterates such restrictions will only be effective if government steps up other aspects of its COVID-19 response, like contact tracing, vaccine procurement, and healthcare system capacity. The Philippines could lower its GDP target for this year due to the economic effects of the two-week enhanced community quarantine that was imposed 2 weeks ago. Philippine Central Bank Governor Benjamin Diokno says the GDP target for this year may go down to between 6 and 7%. Last week, the Development Budget Coordination Committee said it expects a GDP of around 6.5 to 7.5%. Meanwhile, Diokno forecasts an inflation rate of around 4.2% this year. Inflation eased from 4.7% in February to 4.5% in March.
Tingin namin ay patuloy na bababa. Siguro tataas pa ng konti, medyo mataas pa rin ng inflation for the first two quarters this year, pero bababa rin siya sa second half of the year. So around 2022, ang forecast naman namin ay ang inflation will be on average around mga 3.7-3.8%. Kaya asahan namin na makakabawi rin tayo. Siguro by sometime in 2022, makakabalik tayo doon so where we were before in 2019. At yun naman ay nakabase rin yun so kung gaano kabilis natin madideploy yung vaccination.
Despite the continuing surge in COVID-19 cases in the country, government decided to downgrade the lockdown level in the NCR Plus bubble and in some areas. For his thoughts on this, we're now joined by health reform advocate Dr. Tony Lechon. Dr. Lechon, nice to see you again. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon.
All right. You call it counterintuitive, but they're calling it, you know, based on risk-benefit analysis. They say the benefits outweigh the risks. So what are your initial thoughts on that, Dr. Lechon?
Well, I think I would disagree because health is the first wealth. And the usual is the mantra is that the economy will only recover if the coronavirus transmission is controlled. And as you can see, based on the metrics or the DOH's scorecard the last 2 weeks, I think we have a failed ECQ. Basically, it's not the genuine ECQ that we know as compared with last year. You can see the data with new cases around 11,681. The deaths about averaging about 180 to 200 the last 1 week. And you have the positivity rate not really moving at all at 20%. So one in every five tested will be positive. Mm. And the testing is nowhere from the ideal, which is actually 50 to 100,000 per day. And the hospitals are full. And the ones affected, this is really new. And of course, from with the data analytics, Edsel Guido, saying that 20 to 40 years olds are the actual carriers of the new cases. And these particular essential workers are the ones that will run the economy. But at the same time, this particular group might unintentionally carry the virus at home. And based on the data presented by Edson, is that the deaths are commonly from age 50 up to 80. So these are the parents of these essential workers. And this might be actually dangerous in terms of prematurely opening the economy when the cases are up deaths are up, the hospitals are full. So this is where I'm coming from.
Yeah, no, and doctor, I mean, you mentioned another age group as the ones that are being affected severely, those who are dying. But really, you and I both know that anecdotally, the reports that we're having from our, you know, from the hospital and the doctors is that these younger people, 30 to 40, they're the ones that are really getting infected now. They're no longer carriers.
Right. I agree with you. They're not actually super spreaders right now, but they're actually the ones that are being infected. And the ones that would manifest mild symptoms are the ones who would easily die. Why? Because the mild cases are not admitted in the hospitals. The mild cases are usually treated at home. And usually the young ones right now are with more comorbid conditions, meaning to say the young ones are the ones right now with hypertension, diabetes, they smoke. So therefore, the mild symptoms would trigger, you know, easily, let's say, a heart attack or stroke. That's why it is not in the radar of the Department of Health, because they are not the ones admitted. And so this might be underreported at this point in time.
Doctor, in a tweet, you also said that every citizen should be empowered to test, trace, isolate, and quarantine. LGUs, though, have set up their own response, COVID-19 response. Why do you think this is not enough? What should be done? Go ahead.
Because I thought, I just got this idea from Harvard epidemiologists and immunologists who first actually advocated this, the rapid antigen test. If every citizen would actually be able to do testing at home once with the onset of symptoms, so that will be the number one, because, you know, testing is the cornerstone to open the economy together with tracing, quarantine, and isolation. But with the positive testing, that will only trigger the tracings and the isolation and quarantine.
Correct.
Thus, if you are actually symptomatic right now, then you should be able to do that at home and empower yourself and be educated so that you'll be able to treat yourself and not be dependent on the barangay or your healthcare or at the work area. Because if you're not aware of this, you might actually carry the infection inside the workplace. So therefore, the lockdowns right now are definitely out of the picture. The vaccines are nowhere in sight. We have only one vaccine right now with the suspension of AstraZeneca. So therefore, if you don't have this particular scientific approach, which are basically the four pillars in COVID transmission, then we will not be able to lower down the cases. We will be continuing to have additional cases. So the right approach is basically to inform the public on how they will be tested, then trace, and then isolate and quarantine themselves.
Yeah. Because really, when you think about it and you trace it back, why did we find ourselves in the situation that we're in right now? And it's because, obviously, someone dropped the ball. When the numbers started to go down, the testing should have continued. Do you share the same sentiment?
I share the same sentiments. And I think the economic managers are doing or perpetuating the same mistake right now. According to Albert Einstein, doing the same thing and expecting different results is actually insanity. So without actually ramping up the testing, which is actually pegged right now at 30 to 40,000, and then the contact tracing is non-existent, then you will be suffering from the same fate. I'm pretty sure that in the next 2 weeks, you have another surge.
You know, when this surge started to happen, I was talking to another expert, and I asked him the very same question. Is this going to be the last of the surges that we'll see, given how grave it was at the beginning of this surge? But now you're telling me that you are expecting another surge to happen.
I'm expecting this because of the wide base right now. And you can see a high and a steeper rise in the cases. With no vaccination, it will be difficult, because in countries with the same situation like America during the time of President Donald Trump, they just ramped up on the vaccination. And we can see right now the hospitalization and the number of deaths in the United States have really gone down with their vaccination efforts, like in Israel as well. So the silver bullet, really, if you really want to reopen the economy, aside from the scientific approach that we mentioned, we need to have the vaccinations in place, but we have only one. So we need to have the other approved vaccines like Pfizer, Astra, and then you have the Gamaleya, and then bring in the two American vaccines, which are actually effective. And the USA right now is on the edge of finishing the vaccine this May, and they will be celebrating the 4th of July with renewed spirits and confidence with herd immunity.
I don't even want to begin to talk about the vaccination rollout because we just presented a whole different problem right there. But I do want to focus on testing because, as you said, that is a cornerstone of, you know, our way out here from the situation that we have. So what do you think? What is the problem here? I know we've already heard from the contact tracing chief saying the contact tracing is has deteriorated. We heard that from him, I don't know, 2 weeks ago. But at this point, what can be done? What do you think?
Because I think the economic managers and even the testing service, due respect to them, is that they actually do not know the definition of the mass testing. According to the IMF paper, consisting of epidemiologists and economists, you need to test 10 to 20% of the population. So we have about 110 million Filipinos. So you need to test about 22 million. But from January last year up to April of this year, we only conducted 8.27%. And that's very low. We're supposed to have for 1 year about 20 million testing already. Now, with this particular wider base, you need to actually not be doing the same thing because we were actually doing 30 to 40 tests during the July-August surge. And right now, we have 180,000 new cases right now. Then we need to test more than the average testing of about 30 to 40 a day. We cannot actually reduce the positivity rate if we will not actually ramp up on the testing. And if we continue to do this in the absence of tracing, then this will be actually the biggest a problem of this government. You need really to reduce the number of cases right now. We used to have less than 1,000 cases, but right now we're averaging 10,000. And my God, a few days ago, we went to as high as 15,000. And we don't want that to happen in the next few days. Now, with the social mobility right now being violated, because of the opening of the economy, you expect people to move. And without physical distancing and the other minimum health standards being followed, then we have to brace ourselves for the eventuality of having a bigger and higher surge in the next 2 weeks.
I want to talk about that right now, Dr. Lietron. How different will that next surge be? You're saying you're expecting it already. How different will it be from what we're experiencing right now?
Because you can see that the data, there's no, I think it's unstoppable right now. And you have variants right now. And the NCR and the region 4A are actually swamped with some of these variants. And these are actually the ones finding the transmission. And since we have relaxed on the quarantine in the NCR, which is the business epicenter, and the other contiguous area like Region 4A and Region 3. Now, we will not be different from our basic style. So if we were on ECQ the last 2 weeks and we'll be in MECQ, now you can really expect that the virus will still be moving. And that is my main concern.
Yeah, but what will it look like? What will it look like for the healthcare system? What will it look like for the frontliners, for the doctors and the nurses who are running on empty as we speak, doctor?
Well, we will face right now very tired and fatigued healthcare workers. And we're receiving reports right now, though I don't want to, perhaps mention the names of the doctors, but we're seeing right now some doctors who have passed away because of COVID. And we don't want a repeat of last year when you had about 40 medical workers who perished during that particular incident. So the scenarios like this, you have a full hospital, you have weary and tired healthcare workers, the cases will continue to go up, and we might be depleted of the medications, and this will be a problem. As we can see right now, it's very difficult to admit patients in the NCR, and we are actually transferring this in neighboring areas like Region 4A or Region 4B and Central Luzon. So I see right now the healthcare workers. To me, the most important thing, aside from reducing the coronavirus transmission and installing or establishing the healthcare capacities, is actually to protect the healthcare workers. This is of paramount importance to me.
And it seems as if we're not, you know, we're back to last year. We're having the same discussion again. I want to wrap this interview up by talking about the latest on the vaccine front. I'm sure you've heard a Chinese health official admitting that locally made COVID-19 vaccines may not be as effective. What are your thoughts on that, and how might that affect our very own vaccination rollout here in the Philippines? Go ahead, Doctor.
Well, of course, we knew that from the very start because of the indications when it was first launched here. And I think about a few days before the rollout at the Philippine General Hospital, it was first indicated for 18 to 59 years of age, and then not indicated for senior citizens and healthcare workers. And then, but of course, you know, we have well-known personalities who actually inoculated themselves with Sinovac, Dr. Gapli Gaspi, you have Dr. Enzo Salbana, the FDA chief, Dr. Eric Domingo, and their healthcare workers. Now, the senior citizens were actually not included during the first because of that particular study in Brazil, in which they only see about 50% efficacy rate. But when the DOH NITA, the National Immunization Technical Advisory Group, reviewed the literature, they found that there are studies that would actually prove that Sinovac will be effective for senior citizens 65 and up. And this was the reason behind the expansion of the indication for senior citizens. Now, the admission of the Chinese officials regarding the Sinovac, I cannot say anything about it, but there's a report right now. Just to be fair, just reported in Twitter by Dr. Eric Ding from Harvard. So Latin America showed good results for coronavirus. So, you know, we need to balance it out right now with some good studies. We don't want to dampen the spirits of our Filipino colleagues who are out there for vaccination. I think Sinovac is still a good vaccine based on the launch in several countries. And also basically because of the testimonies of healthcare workers receiving this vaccine. So I would still support Sinovac, given the data that we have, despite the admission of the Chinese CDC officials about the efficacy of Sinovac.
All right, we're going to actually leave it at that. Health reform advocate, Dr. Tony Liachon, thanks for joining us today, and I hope to talk to you again during better days. You keep safe and you take care.
Thank you, Carmina. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take a break now. Coming up, Philippine authorities looking into the death of another curfew violator. And a top Chinese health official, as we just said, admitted locally made COVID-19 vaccines don't have high rates of protection. More on that when we come back. Here in Dateline Philippines, stay with us here on ANC. And we're back. You're still on Dateline Philippines here on ANC. On with the news, a curfew violator in the province of Laguna died after allegedly being beaten up by village watchmen. Local police now searching for the two village watchmen involved in the death of 26-year-old Hernani Jimenez. The victim was reportedly looking for work when he was apprehended for violating curfew Wednesday. Jimenez collapsed from his injuries and died at a hospital Friday. Earlier this month, another curfew violator died in Cavite after being forced to do intense exercise as punishment. passengers who fake their COVID-19 test results may be fined up to 50,000 pesos or serve a maximum of 6 months in jail. That warning coming from Philippine Airlines after it caught at least 15 individuals who presented fraudulent health documents in Manila. Those passengers were taking flights to Cotabato, Bipolog, and Zamboanga. The country's flag carrier says they have since been turned over to the police. PAL also advised Filipinos to trust only legitimate medical providers for their COVID-19 tests. China exploring the possibility of mixing COVID-19 vaccines to bolster their efficacy. That's after the country's top disease control official made a rare admission on the performance of homegrown vaccines. Here's the full story.
China's top disease control official has said the country is formally considering mixing COVID-19 vaccines as a way of further boosting vaccine efficacy. Available data shows Chinese vaccines lag behind others, including Pfizer and Moderna, in terms of efficacy, but require less stringent temperature controls during storage. Gao Fu, the director of the Chinese Centers for Disease Control and Prevention on Saturday, said the current available vaccines, quote, don't have very high rates of protection. Adding, quote, inoculation using vaccines of different technical lines is being considered. Gao said that taking steps to optimize the vaccine process, including changing the number of doses and the length of time between doses, was a definite solution to the efficacy issues. China has developed four domestic vaccines approved for public use, and an official said on Saturday that the country will likely produce 3 billion doses by the end of the year. A COVID-19 vaccine developed by China's Sinovac was found to have an efficacy rate of slightly above 50% in Brazilian clinical trials. A separate study in Turkey said it was 83.5% effective. No detailed efficacy data has been released on vaccines made by China's Sinopharm. A World Health Organization panel said in March that both vaccine makers have presented data on their COVID-19 vaccines, indicating levels of efficacy in line with those required by the WHO. China has shipped millions of its vaccines abroad, and officials and state media have fiercely defended the shots while calling into question the safety and logistics capabilities of other vaccines.
The Philippines has received 500,000 more doses of Sinovac's COVID-19 vaccine, which the government purchased. The shipment arrived from China Sunday afternoon. Vaccine Chief Carlito Galvez Jr. says the new batch of CoronaVac will be delivered to the Visayas and Mindanao, as well as some areas in Metro Manila with high COVID-19 infections. The Chinese firm has committed to deliver a 1.5 million doses this month and 2 million in May. The Philippine government also expects an initial 20,000 doses of Russia's Sputnik V vaccine to arrive next week. A COVID-19 vaccine from South Korea showing promising results after it yielded a 91 to 95% efficacy rate in its phase 1 and phase 2 clinical trials. According to Glovax Biotech, the local firm which will distribute the vaccine in the Philippines, it's UCORVAC-19 uses a tried-and-tested protein subunit technology. The company adds the combined phase 2 and phase 3 clinical trials are scheduled to begin in the Philippines this month.
We are confident with our product, with our test results in phase 1 and phase 2. And that is why we wanted to conduct a clinical trial that is platform to platform, which means that we are going to compare the efficacy and safety with other vaccines that are already provided with EUA. So this will be combining or testing those different types of COVID vaccines and to see which are more effective and safer for the Philippine context. No, so we are going to compare protein subunit versus inactivated.
Facebook launching a new effort to get more Americans vaccinated against COVID-19. And as this report tells us, the social media giant is converting part of its headquarters in Menlo Park, California, into an inoculation site.
Facebook has expanded into new territory, this time converting part of its Menlo Park headquarters into a vaccination site. Many people stayed 6 feet apart Saturday as they lined up to be inoculated against COVID-19.
And we're expecting to do about 1,200 every weekend.
Luisa Buada is the CEO of California's Ravenswood Family Health Network, which teamed up with Facebook for this initiative.
It's so important that we get rid of the COVID virus so people can go back to more of a normal life.
Local resident Jermaine King jumped at the chance to be vaccinated.
It's a sense of relief. Right now, currently, I've got a very, very close friend who's down in Southern California in ICU with COVID, and he's the same age as me. So to be able to know that I'm protecting myself and protecting others by getting the vaccine, I think it's pretty awesome. It feels good.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said as of Friday morning, more than 178 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines had been administered across the country. Officials are urging Americans to get a shot as soon as possible, in part to prevent new variants of COVID-19 from spreading. The highly contagious variant, first discovered in the UK, has become the most common version of the virus in the U.S. as cases continue to climb. That's according to CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who said this week daily cases of the virus were up 2.3% from the previous 7-day average.
India bans the export of remdesivir as coronavirus infections in that country soar to a new daily high. This has led to a spike in demand for the antiviral drug. India's COVID-19 tally has just surpassed the 13 million mark. The country's health ministry says the export ban will be in place until the coronavirus situation in the country improves. Remdesivir was one of the first drugs to show promising results in cutting the recovery time of COVID-19 patients. In other news, the Philippines should join its allies in conducting freedom of navigation patrols to assert its claim over the West Philippine Sea. That's according to retired Supreme Court Associate Justice Antonio Carpio. He says an alliance between claimants, their allies, and non-government organizations should be formed against China as Beijing pushes its nine-dash line claim over the South China Sea. Carpio adds Manila can raise Beijing's recent aggressions before the Permanent Court of Arbitration in The Hague.
Dapat kukuha tayo ng mga ruling para papakita sa mundo na China hindi sumusunod ng international law. There's freedom of navigation. Kahit sino dyan, pwedeng mag-sail, pwedeng dumaan, hindi pwede hintuin. Hindi pwede iharas sa EEZ. Yung mga freedom of navigation operations na yan, that is the strongest enforcement of the arbitral ruling. Dapat suportahan natin ito kasi every time dumadaan ng US warships dyan, UK, France, they are asserting the ruling. Dapat sumama tayo sa kanila para makita ng China na they are not in possession of the West Philippine Sea.
Carpio also says Chinese vessels violated international law when they chased a Philippine boat in the exclusive economic zone of the Philippines last week. Meanwhile, the Philippines and the United States kicking off a two-week joint military exercise today. The annual Balikatan was suspended last year due to the pandemic. Unlike previous exercises, this year's drills will be scaled down. Only 1,700 soldiers will participate from both countries. The resumption of the Balikatan comes after a talk between the two countries' defense chiefs. They discuss the drills, the situation in the South China Sea, and other regional security developments. In that phone call, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin also reiterated the importance of the visiting forces agreement between Washington and Manila. Philippine Defense Chief Delfin Lorenzana has committed to discuss the agreement with President Rodrigo Duterte, who unilaterally canceled the two-decade-old deal last year. Well, the U.S. has released a photo showing one of its guided missile destroyers shadowing China's aircraft carrier strike group in the East and South China Seas. The photo shows the captain of the USS Mustin and his deputy commander watching the Liaoning just a few thousand meters away. For Andre Chang, the editor-in-chief of the Kanawha Defense Review, the photo was a warning to the Chinese military that the U.S. was thoroughly informed about the Liaoning strike group. According to the South China Sea Strategic Situation Probing Initiative, the U.S. military had increased the deployment of aircraft and warships to the East and South China Seas. In the NBA, the San Antonio Spurs edged the Dallas Mavericks behind veteran wingman DeMar DeRozan. With a game tied at 117 all, DeRozan nailed a step-back jumper with less than a second left to hand the Spurs the victory. DeRozan finished with 33 points, 27 coming in the second half. The win halted the Spurs' five-game losing skid. They're now just a game back of Memphis for the eighth spot in the Western Conference. And that'll do it for today. Thank you for joining us. I'm Karina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Playback this newscast too on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.